Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and it's Friday evening. And we're going back to Gaza to talk to our friend journalist Hannah Salah. And Hannah, there has been a ceasefire. Before we get to that, I just want to say to you a big thank you for all the work that you've done over the last 11-12 days. And I know we've been talking a lot longer than that, but I think it's nice to mention that a lot of people heard what you were saying, and it helped make the situation on the ground more accessible to people outside the borders of Gaza, even to the extent where you got mentioned. Your reporting got mentioned in the Irish Parliament in the Dáil yesterday, and I thought that was a real testament to the work that you've done. So I want to thank you on behalf of our listeners and on behalf of myself and Martin for talking to us all the way through this process.
I would like to thank you first, Tony, because you give me the chance actually to speak about Gaza. I was not aware that this change will really happen and will matter for Gaza. And my voice will be heard that much in Ireland. We were starting to speak before 5 months. I was giving some sort of updates about how people are living under the Israeli siege. And I was not expecting that we will one day speak in the war circumstances, actually. And I'm very thankful and appreciate all the efforts and all the solidarity that I received on my social media and also in the Ireland Parliament. Actually, this is a big change and a big step that we need. And we will need such efforts in the future also to make lobbying and more advocacy about the Israeli siege that need to be lifted.
I think that's exactly why we wanted to have this conversation today. It is a good day. There is a ceasefire. That is a good thing. We don't want to say that's not a good thing, but we need to also acknowledge that when the eyes of the world look away, there is still a siege. The siege is over a decade long, and the ability to freedom of movement for the Palestinian people, the people in Gaza, and the ability to, you know, work in a normal economy, have financial services, have electricity, running through a normal electricity service, access to water, access to the seas to fish, all of these things. They haven't changed just because there's a ceasefire, Hannah. We need to keep the pressure up to make sure that the international community say, yes, a ceasefire is great, but it's not enough.
Yes, actually, I should give some updates about what does the ceasefire means. Palestinian factions and Israel indirectly negotiated about this ceasefire. And they reached an initial agreement about stop launching rockets from both sides starting from 2 a.m. Today. So today is the first day of the ceasefire. People were not that much sure here in Gaza that Israel will stop firing rockets. So they did not return directly to their houses in the night. They waited until the morning, and most of them returned back to their lands, their agricultural lands, their houses. Even those who lost their houses, they returned back just to do some check about what happened in their areas. So the ceasefire is not an agreement. It's not a truce agreement. It's just initial agreement to stop firing rockets. The sea is still closed for 13 days, for 2 days from the current escalation, it started to be closed. So fishermen depend on daily basis for their livelihood. They are in a catastrophic situation because they cannot go and fishing. The only Israeli commercial crossing is still closed. They open it for a few hours today just for the entry of fodder and some food items. Until now, the solar or the fuel for the electricity plant did not enter Gaza. People in Gaza need the fuel for many reasons, and until now we still receive 4 hours per 24 4 hours of electricity per day.
Just going to interrupt the podcast for a few seconds while I basically ask you to, if you're listening, if you're enjoying what you're hearing, if you think it has value or it helps or it changes conversations or it's amplifying voices that you might not hear anywhere else, please help us keep doing that. It's really that simple. It's you are the only thing that keeps the podcast going. Listeners putting their hands in their pocket, going to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. So it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. You go in there, there's a range of options. Plus, there's a lot of benefits. Make sure if you do come in at the $6, $5.50 a month, you get a consolidated feed. Which means you get all of our podcasts, including the patron only exclusive ones, which there are mountains of, by the way, and access to our Sunday shows and other events. You'll see the benefits in there. It would really help us. It helps us keep going. Things are pretty difficult right now, I have to be honest, but you know, if you think that you enjoy this, or maybe enjoy is the wrong word, but you think it has value, if it has value, show it. That's all. patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and let you get back to listening to the podcast. Thank you.
Electricity plan did not enter Gaza. People in Gaza need the fuel for many reasons, and until now we still receive 4 hours per 24 4 hours of electricity per day. Regarding the farmers, they returned back to their lands, but they found that most of the production was damaged, especially that they could not go to irrigate their lands during the 11 days of this escalation. They lost the water pumps, they lost the wells, they lost even solar energy was used to cope with the electricity outage. Now they should start from scratch to rebuild what this war destroyed. Some of the houses even that was destroyed was not related to military activities. Many people here in Gaza, they went to visit each other, and they are normal civilian people with their families. They went out of their houses based on evacuation orders from the Israeli army during the escalation. So the destruction reached a lot of civilian houses and buildings. The streets are totally damaged. I just took around a small round in our street. I saw damages, and I thought it's more than 11 days actually of destruction. In the other areas, the destruction is more. I'm expecting to go tomorrow for a round in other areas, but this is really shocking for all the people. At 2 a.m., many people went to the streets directly. They were celebrating. They were shooting fire in the air just because they cannot believe that they are still alive. Some of them consider this is a victory for the Palestinian resistance, because we were resilient for 11 days of Israeli strikes. Then the Israeli cabinet announced that they will start the ceasefire from their side. That's mean they could not beat Gaza, and the Gazans remained resilient. So many people consider this is a victory. Other people here consider it just an end of an escalation, a new round of escalation, and they still don't have that much hope that this is victory, and the coming days will give them good conditions of this agreement between Israel and Palestinian factions. Many people are desperate about building their houses or building their business again, because if they build it and they invest their money again, they might lose this in seconds, because they are in risk. The uncertainty situation in Gaza is huge, and you cannot do something with big certainty that it will not be damaged by Israeli airstrike or by the context of these short escalations that happen usually.
And Hannah, I think you've just given us a really brilliant summary, because when over the course of the conflict, you were fairly clear that some of your friends had lost heart. They had decided that they couldn't rebuild their businesses or their homes, and that they might have to leave Gaza. That is a, you know, that is a reality now for a lot of people as the ceasefire takes hold and people then decide, you know, there were scenes of joy last night into the hours where you posted yourself on social media videos of people dancing and celebrating. And that was, you know, of course, that's great to see, but there's a lot of people that need to mourn for their loss, and there's a lot of economic damage. In terms of, though, the pressures, I don't know if you saw, but Joe Biden credited Benjamin Netanyahu for dealing with this within 11 days, as if it was some sort of well done for not going on very long. I've a couple of questions. One is, do you feel some of the pressure within Israel from when the Palestinian and Arab people went on a general strike helped? And do you think that the role of the international community did anything? It's kind of a two-part question, and probably both have separate answers. But if we could deal with the strike within Israel, did that impact on their economy make them think that this is something that we need to look at as well?
Actually, I did not have the chance to hear what Biden spoke today. I did not have much electricity to follow all the news. I was following what is happening today here in Gaza. But I expect that the answer came today from what the Palestinians said in many statements. They said that this escalation returned back the priority to the Palestinian cause for many nations. And they consider that there is a new awareness, and the awareness of people around the world returned back to understand what is the conflict between Israel and Palestinians. And they consider that this is an achievement, though that we get harmed by this destruction and we need years to rebuild. But the people around the world understand what is the issue of Jerusalem, why Palestinians started this escalation, how the Palestinian people were killed here using all types of weapons. Even the people stayed resilient in Gaza. And all these components of the conflict are clear, and was not damaged like what happened in the normal days, as the Israeli propaganda worked to change the awareness of people about what is the Palestinian cause and why Palestinians are fighting and who the Palestinians are fighting in these days. So I think that this is one of the things that changed during these 11 days. And we saw more support for Palestinians, more awareness from the international community. I understand that the political actors have some aims and they have interest for each other. So supporting each other is part of this game. And I don't believe that they think that what happened in Gaza is fair.
Absolutely. I agree that even when political leaders were absent, some of the statements from Joe Biden and from the EU were very disappointing. But the people themselves were marching. You know, they were marching in London, they were marching in Dublin, they were marching in Cork, they were marching all over Europe. And even in the US, there was people marching. And this is in the middle of a pandemic as well. So it's difficult to protest in a pandemic. I suppose I want to touch on the next steps to this are on, you know, we spoke again about the Oslo Accords and these things, but a lot of this can't exist anymore because that Palestine doesn't exist because of the amount of settlements and the occupied territories and how there are been borders drawn everywhere and how everything has been removed. Are you hearing from the within Palestine, within Gaza, of any, you know, what would be the solution to this? Because it does seem that there is no possibility. You can't have a two-state solution when there's not enough land for two states. It's simply, it's not geographically possible when the way the map is currently drawn.
actually, this was the first thing or the first issue of Palestinian Authority when it signed Oslo accords in the 1990s or 1994 exactly. They considered many years of negotiation for peace, and all of these efforts failed. So the first uprising started, then the second. The first uprising, then the Israeli siege, then these rounds of short wars that killed many Palestinians. All of these were efforts to achieve peace in peaceful way, but because these all failed, Palestinians are not considering the negotiation are a best tool to achieve the two-state solution. I think that Gaza is different from the Palestinian, from the West Bank and Palestinian Authority, and this is like an Israeli tool to isolate Gaza. They don't want the ideology for all Palestinians to be the same. The Gaza Strip has the ideology of fighting as a tool to achieve the freedom. West Bank Palestinian Authority consider the negotiation and peace talk as the tool to achieve peace and freedom for Palestinians. Israel isolated Gaza in 2007 to make sure that the resistance ideology and tools and methodologies are not transferred to West Bank, and they succeeded in splitting Gaza from West Bank. So you will find the two tools, but both tools are not achieving any progress because Israel is not taking these talks or even this type of escalation as tool to achieve a freedom for Palestinians, and Palestinians are fighting to achieve their freedom. No, Israel want to add more restrictions, and it considered that easing some of these restrictions a big achievement for Palestinians. So we should stop at that level, and we should not exceed our levels by asking or demanding for a freedom and a free state. So I don't think that Israeli side is serious in doing this negotiation or in reacting to the Palestinian resistance in Gaza or even to the negotiation with Palestinian Authority in West Bank. In the both sides, we are not achieving any progress in getting into the longer term achievement or a free state. We until now don't have currency. We depend on the Israeli currency. We don't have central bank. We don't have economy. If we want to import, we should go through Israel. This is according to Oslo Accord and the Paris agreement that was signed by Palestinian Authority. So if we want to build a free state and we want to build a new or a longer term achievement, this need efforts from players and actors in the region and at the international community level. So Palestinians are alone. The Palestinian Authority is alone in West Bank fighting with its methodology, and the Palestinian factions in Gaza are using their own methodology to fight Israel to achieve free state. And Israel is splitting both sides because it don't want the unity to be existing in the Palestinian side, so they will be more having more power. Because if the West Bank and Gaza were united, so you will be using two tools, the negotiation and the resistance. One can fight in the ground, and then another one can be on the table negotiating. And that was why Israel is splitting Gaza from West Bank. They want Palestinians to be very weak. They don't want them to be strong and having many tools and be united against the Israeli violations. So I think that this is so much complicated and need efforts from international community, but the international community and people or actors in the region have their own interests that affected how they deal with the Palestinian cause.
I think I see this is the problem. It's you've summed it up quite well in terms of how it's been separated and how the international community, it suits some aspects of geopolitical big players to have Israel as their, you know, their military bulwark in the Middle East, but it still results in 5 million people being oppressed on a daily basis. So it's 5 million people in the West Bank and in Gaza who are denied their rights and denied their autonomy, they're denied their dignity and denied the ability to actually fully participate, as we would say, you know, in and I'm going to use that term, awful term, in Western civilization and how we're supposed to treat one another. So it does seem that unless we can change the mentality there, that there is no solution. But I'm very concerned that despite the Oslo Accords, despite the agreements of the boundaries, despite all of that, there is no feasible two-state solution. And as currently the maps are drawn, it's just not possible.
Yes, Tony, I think that this is too much complicated to discuss in a few minutes, actually. Yeah. And many people in Gaza now are thinking only of what will happen in the coming days. I think that we are all in shock. We're still in shock from what happened in these 11 days, and we will not have that much chance to speak about more longer term solutions. I think that people who were celebrating today, they were not celebrating that we succeeded in this round of escalation. We were, or they were, celebrating that they are still alive. And this is a problem, actually. You will live and you will continue living and you will continue struggling. And that is not a solution. I think that the suffering will continue unless there is a big change happened at regional level. And this is hope for Palestinians. And I'm not sure how to discuss these in-depth issues, but I understand from the context that I'm living in that even Palestinian factions now are not thinking about Jerusalem. I will say it frankly. Palestinian factions paid from their blood and from Palestinians in Gaza blood to defend the Jerusalem rights and to stop the violations. But they were considering today speaking, but they were not speaking loudly, actually. They wanted to speak that Gaza is not the only responsible person. Gaza will not be the only one who is fighting Israel and paying alone the cost of the Israeli violations in West Bank. It was hard for the Palestinian in Gaza. I understand, and people understand how the Palestinians in Gaza are keeping resilient, and they cannot stop and they fighting, and they cannot stop and watch what is happening in Jerusalem. But what happened in these 11 days of destruction and the and being alone in this battle have teach these factions that they should have external support from Arab countries and from international community. I think that they will take lessons learned from what happened and will be working on some of development projects or even plans to develop Gaza, to allow Palestinians in Gaza to live in more dignity. This will be the biggest priority for politicians here. Today, some of them went to Egypt, actually, to negotiate the conditions of the truce. And I think that this will be the priority. I don't think that they will be able to negotiate more about Jerusalem. This is a big issue. It's not only a national issue. Jerusalem is not a Palestinian issue only. It's also related to the Arab people and the Islamic people, and even Christians who have these holy places in Jerusalem. So there is need for support for Palestinians in Gaza, and I think that this should not stop even after this escalation.
I agree 100% with you, and I really appreciate you saying to me, you know, we can't have this. We're having this conversation. There's a much bigger conversation to be had, and I think you're right that Gaza can't continue to bleed for everyone else. I think it's amazing that the people of Gaza. You know, you're right to say that they were celebrated just being alive, but that's not enough. That's not the solution. And I do think that you're right that, you know, Jerusalem, for example, has requires access for people from all faiths and none. It's a very important site to Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and we know all of these things and are true. But at the same time, you know, the people of Gaza are the people who have bled the most and lost the most over these last 11 days. Hannah, I'm conscious that I'm taking up your Friday evening, and that you're going to go. You got some ice cream today, and maybe there's space for a little bit of joy. So apologies for taking up too much of your time, but I'm very grateful for you to continue to talk to us, and it's made a world of difference in helping get the story of On the Ground out to so many people who are listening. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Tony.
Listen, folks, we'll be back again. We'll be talking to you tomorrow and Sunday. Tune in. You'll get us all on all the feeds, and we will hope to keep covering this subject, because when the world moves on, it doesn't change the fact that the siege is still in place, and that is what needs to be lifted. And Hannah is right. It's complicated. It's complex. But if the will is there to do it, there's nothing that's impossible. Thank you so much, Hannah Salah. We really appreciate your time again.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.